Welcome back to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Time to switch it up a little bit and talk some NBA basketball. Draft tomorrow night. You can hear it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Joined now by Josh Martin from the Bleacher Report. Josh, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Hope you are. Very busy time, I'm sure, for you. What do you find most interesting right now? The way the draft will shake out in the lottery and at the top, or some of the other things that are going around at the NBA right now, like potential player movement, the future of Paul George, LeBron maybe after a year somewhere else. Well, what's got your radar up more?
Well, aside from July 18th, which is the day after Summer League, we can finally all decompress a little bit. I would go with the player movement. I think that's what's going to impact maybe the year after that, what's going to impact things most proximally. You know, it's interesting in the draft to project, you know, what is Markelle Fultz going to be, what's Lonzo Ball going to be, but we don't know how any of these kids coming in the league are going to fare once they get to the NBA. We know that Paul George is a superstar. We know that Jimmy Butler is a star. We know that LeBron James is arguably the preeminent player in basketball, and these guys their names are all involved, among others, in the hot stove so far this summer. So I think that's really what's got my attention, and certainly has the attention of pretty much everyone else in the basketball world right now.
And that, you know, obviously relates to the fact that we've seen so much of, you know, the teams trying to figure out a way to have at least the core three players that are deemed maybe necessary now to win the NBA championship, and Golden State's probably taken it to a further level, maybe four, maybe three. But and I think it's not arguable that the league has flourished during this particular span of time. The ratings have never been higher, things like that. Do you think that the general template that we see teams trying to create is good for the league, or is it just flat necessary?
I think it's both. I think, well, it's really a reflection, at least in part, of the level of talent that there is in the league right now. There's enough, not to go around, not necessarily for every team to have a superstar, but there's enough for a handful of teams to gather great talent, put out a great product on the floor every night, and hopefully into the playoffs as well. I think that ultimately is good for the league because people really pay the most attention to the NBA in the playoffs. So what you want really is a selection of really great teams that play an appealing style, that have star power, that have names that can draw you in, like we saw with Cleveland and like we saw with Golden State. And it looks like right now that there are a number of other teams that are involved in this arms race that are looking to load up this could make the championship chase that much more competitive next season.
Speaking of that, this is a topic for maybe another whole show, but I've been somewhat astounded. And, you know, I love basketball. I love watching the NBA. The style of play these days is great. But the NBA playoffs have become the most chalk event in all of sports, and it's not even close. Are you surprised that there seems to be so much great interest, especially in the earlier rounds when for a decade now, we basically have had virtually number one seed against number one seed all or most years?
I mean, that's just the nature of basketball. It's not the NFL or the NHL or whatever, where you can have a great player, but you really need a whole host of great players. You know, baseball is the same way. One guy isn't necessarily going to get you there unless he's Tom Brady in the NFL, and he'll get you there just about every year. In the NBA, if you have the best player in basketball, which you could say is LeBron James, I would say is LeBron James, you've been in the finals the last 7 years. And then if you've got the second best player in the league or the third best player in the league like the Warriors do now, you're right there as well. So it's that's just the nature of the sport, is that one player can impact the game to that extent. One player can play every position. One player can man every spot. One player can make a huge difference on defense. So unless you're going to fundamentally change the nature of the game of basketball, it's hard to get away from the reality that we're in, that the best teams from the regular season ultimately are the teams that end up competing for the championship.
Do you think the league would benefit some, I do, from the earlier rounds going back to five games so we might have at least the chance for an upset? Seven games just seems a great test, and it has proved out to be that way, but it is virtually guaranteed that the better team wins every time.
Yeah, because if you have more possessions and more games, then talent is going to win out. So you could argue that it makes more sense in that regard to go back to five games, but good luck selling the league
right.
on
less
fewer
basketball.
Playoff games, especially after this postseason where there really were so few compared to what there could have been.
That's a very good point indeed with the lopsided nature of the series. Who do you think would be the better fit for the Cleveland Cavaliers, Jimmy Butler or Paul George?
I think this is a tough one because I think if you're any team that's trying to pursue a top-notch wing, you're probably going to go after Jimmy Butler first, and that's the Cavs included, because he has that extra year on his deal. So I think in that regard, from a team-building perspective, when you're trying to look at the big picture here, and Jimmy Butler is the one that you should go after if you're the Cavs, especially if you're concerned about LeBron James leaving next summer. And with Jimmy Butler, you have another guy to, number one, convince LeBron to stay long term, and number two, if LeBron leaves, you have another guy to help you remain competitive. And I think just defensively, Jimmy Butler to me is a little bit more stout than Paul George, and that's really what this is all about. If you're the Cavs, is trying to get that wing defender you can stick on Kevin Durant for the entirety of a series. And if you're the Cavs, you're really just aiming for the Warriors at this point and trying to figure out how to take them down.
You think the Warriors are in a place right now where the fans are still enjoying it as a whole, not the fans who obviously are a fan of either of the teams or any team for that matter, but just a league standpoint, and how many more titles would it take before they're hated?
You know, far be it for me to try to jump into the mind of each and every fan of the NBA. Look, to me, I understand why people either currently resent the Warriors or will probably grow to resent the Warriors for their success, because one of the things that makes sports interesting is sort of a lack of predictability, that there's some sort of suspense involved. And the Warriors being this great sort of saps the league of that. But in terms of pure basketball, I think really people who appreciate the game, appreciate the aesthetics of the game, appreciate really the fundamentals and the joy of the game can't help but appreciate what it is that the Warriors have put together. They play this tremendously fluid style that's so much fun to watch. They're impossible to guard, so their offense flows so smoothly, and they're so, so unselfish. You saw it time and again during the finals where, you know, Kevin Durant and Steph Curry would run pick and roll. The double team comes. They just pass, find the open man. It's an easy wide open shot. That's basketball at its most basic, but also basketball at its most beautiful.
I agree. Hell, they almost overpass. I mean, you know, they almost are looking for like the soccer equivalent of a tap-in. And of course it's three instead of two, but they gave away some dead layups to pass the ball out.
Yeah, and look, when you're the Warriors, you can afford to do that because you can either get a wide-open layup or a wide-open three, and there are some guys on that team, you know, between Steph, Clay and KD, for whom a wide open three is a better shot than a wide open layup or dunk, because they're probably going to knock it down.
Probably the scariest part for other teams for the near future is the fact that offensively, at least, Clay Thompson was horrible in the last couple rounds of the playoffs, and they still won in a breeze.
Yeah, I think that's what's sort of interesting when you think about how much better this Warriors team can get. This was year one for them. with Kevin Durant. And they hardly, during the regular season and for most of the playoffs, ran much with the Steph Curry, Kevin Durant pick and roll. So there's a lot of work to be done there. There's a lot of work to be done to figure out how better to integrate Klay Thompson in this new reality with Kevin Durant. There's a lot of new wrinkles, room for new wrinkles to put in there. And, you know, these guys are just starting to get used to each other. So what happens now when that core has been together with Kevin Durant for 2, 3, 4 years and playing basketball is just second nature to them? Playing basketball together is second nature. That's when these Warriors could become really scary, which is crazy to think after a season in which they won 67 regular season games and went 16-1 in the playoffs.
Let's turn to the draft. We see, you know, people talk about who would have, like, Porzingis would definitely be the number one pick in the draft if the draft were this year. And you know, it appears now that Markel Fultz is going to be the top pick, but certainly there's, you know, other people in the mix that, you know, no clear-cut winner, per se, as far as the top of the draft is concerned. Do you think that means that these guys are all really good, or this is kind of a draft where maybe the top players will just be pieces on a team?
Well, think about the players themselves. They're all guys who just finished their freshman year in college. They're all super, super young. So by nature, there's a lot of potential both for great success and for bust, because we really don't know who these guys are as basketball players, much less as NBA players. So I think there's still a lot to be determined, and that there's been so much hype about this draft, I think speaks to the potential that you see in all these guys, that maybe there's not a surefire can't-miss superstar like an Anthony Davis or a Karl-Anthony Towns or someone like that that we've seen in recent years. But I think there are a lot of guys who have the potential to pop basically 1 through 10 in this draft, depending on how the order falls. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, them getting to the right situation and seeing how they react to being pros.
Well, one team does have the number one pick. If you were holding that pick, who would you pick?
I'm a little biased because I went to UCLA, and thus I watched a ton of UCLA basketball this year. So I, for one, would go with Lonzo Ball, just because to me, he is really the type of prospect who, if he develops properly, can really change the way the game is played. You know, he has such a unique pace about him, a unique style, a very unique shot, one that's been scrutinized over and over again over the course of the season. But I think he's one who could really see out the game as a whole, you know, like a guy like Steph Curry did, like a LeBron James. It's destined to be the greatest. Because he's sort of unorthodox, he has that potential. But I think what's made Markel Fultz so appealing to NBA folks, scouts, and whatnot, is that he is more conventional for today's game. He's a lot easier to project. He's a scoring guard who also is a great passer and can work in the pick and roll. And in today's NBA, that's great. But what's the NBA of tomorrow going to look like? I think that's the sort of player that Lonzo Ball can be and can sort of help to push that effort forward.
And the NBA, usually there's so many deals made on the night of the NBA draft that it takes about 3 days to digest who's going where, and the guys who put on a cap often aren't going to be in the same spot. Do we expect to see that type of situation again?
Yeah, it looks like it, because you have, I think, 4 or 5 teams that have multiple first-round picks, including the Lakers, who have 3 first-round picks. I believe the Blazers have 3. The Utah Jazz have 2, so I think you're going to see some measure of wheeling and dealing. It might not result in superstars being moved, but there has been enough smoke around guys like Paul George and Jimmy Butler that there's the potential for fire on draft night. But I think at the very least, you will see some teams try to package their picks together to move up, and some other teams like Portland using their picks later in the draft to try to move off some onerous salary that's on their books.
We really appreciate the time. It's an exciting time in the NBA, and I know you're busy following it. So thanks a lot for taking the time, Josh.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, Josh Martin from the Bleacher Report, talking NBA draft and NBA movement right here on the program.